hope you don't plan on taking all night. We're running out of scotch, babe.
Hello, everybody. This is Again with This Melrose Place. Season 3, episode 25 is today's show. It is called All About Brooke. Oh, switched up some orders of some things because I missed up and then I tried to save it. Was I successful? Probably not. Here your host, Tarin Zarep.
Hi.
Hey, everybody. All About Dave. Buckle your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy podcast. Before we begin, again with this episode 47, which is dropping May 14th. Is this worse than jazz? Probably. It also is jazz. We will be listening to 1998's album, Melrose Place Jazz.
Oh, God.
Yes, this is a real thing that exists. No, Tara is not obligated to listen to it. Woo! I will listen to it and report back, provided I have not perished of tootling, in which case avenge me. And also avenge Etta James, who somehow got mixed up in this foolishness. Also, she's on the track listing, and it's kind of all that's keeping me going with this stupid idea. Any hoodle, if you want to hear that, or you don't, but you want to throw some money at us to not do it, patreon.com/againwiththis. We are open to negotiation because business. And now our episode.
No, you're committed to do it now. The Discogs link is in the show notes. So even though the album in toto is like not still in print, you can find it on eBay. I don't necessarily recommend that you seek it out, but all of the tracks are just tracks. So I'm sure you can find them around if you mm-hmm. want. Make your own.
But don't do that. That's what I'm for. That's what the money is for. Just Buncey's got this and she's got to learn. So... Yeah.
All right. Let us talk about All About Brooke, starting with our C plot. A stolen credit card opens up a rift between Jake and Jess.
Oh, no.
At the complex, Jess and all his hair swim without a swim cap in the pool. And when Joe comes out of her place, he gets out and we see he's in cutoff jeans. Apparently, this is a thing the Hanson brothers do.
What? Drink.
We've already seen Jake do this in an earlier episode. It's a hilarious detail for one of the writers to remember, or the costumer, whoever it was. Good job.
They also must have remembered that I was not angry at it the first time, nor am I upset with it now. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, he doesn't look bad. It's just weird. Mm-mm. Like, this, I mean, maybe it's for resistance. I'm sure we said all these things the first time with Jake. Anyway,
it's for resistance. He's a poor. He can't afford trunks. I mean, what would they probably do in that instance? Swim naked.
Sure.
Would I rather see that? I would. Yeah. It's a network show. We all have our crosses to bear.
So true. Speaking of bearing crosses, Joe is carrying a crate full of gear. Jess is insisting on helping her with it just as Jake comes out to witness his damp chivalry, as well as Joe pushing Jess's hair out of his eyes at his request once his hands are full.
He's dripping all over the camera equipment.
Right.
I was glad on David T. Cole's behalf that he was not having to watch that after like that and exposure in 1 week.
Oof. Right. So at the bottom of the stairs, Jake snatches the crate away and inserts himself in Joe's business, dismissing Jess. And Joe teases him about this brotherly competition, which Jake denies is what it is. And when he's gone, Joe and Jess exchange a long, unmeaningful look before Jess dives back into the pool. And the next day, at Jake's, Jess suggests that they clear the air and talk about what happened with Joe. Jess didn't know what their deal was, but obviously Jake still feels something for her, and Jess wants to respect that. And Jake, still furrowing his brow, thanks him before filling Jess in on their backstory for the new viewers. He still thinks he and Joe will find their way back to each other eventually. And as Jake heads out, Jess comments that Jake has a nice life and is a lucky man. Jake says he's not that lucky, still has to work for a living. Oh, hey, Jess didn't bring much with him. Can he borrow a shirt? And Jake tells him to help himself, and Jess is all like, oh, I will. We get it.
I will also note that Jess opens this conversation by noting that they got into the little tug of war over Joe the previous day. So they've been bouncing off each other at both work and in a one bedroom or two bedroom. I don't remember which Jake has, for a whole day waiting for the cameras to show up so that they could have this polite fight.
Right. Well, he's sleeping on the pullout, so I think it's a one bedroom probably. Mm. Sydney and Jess are working when she sees him down a shot. I guess he's playing the drinking game too, and tells him he's not supposed to do that on the job. He snits that it's his brother's place, so she tells him to go ahead and break Jake's number one rule if he wants. And he asks if she's going to narc on him, which she never did with the files, by the way. I know we spoiled that in the last episode, but she didn't. Mm. And she says her shift is done and she has better things to do than worry about a loser like him. We will see those better things in the A-plot. And when she's gone, Jess goes to bus a table and sees a customer left their credit card with the old carbon receipt, because it's the past. Also, it's a Chase Manhattan MasterCard.
Mm-hmm.
The past. And while no one's watching, he just casually slips it in his back pocket. And the next day before Shooters opens, Jess suggests a dinner out, the two, him and Jake and Joe. And out at that dinner, Jess is regaling Joe with tales of the Hanson brothers.
Drink.
Misspent youth, only Dennis the Menace level shit, it sounds like, and she is loving it. Jake doesn't even seem to mind. And since the end of the story is that Jake got Jess in trouble for whatever it was, he jokes that Jake should be the one to pay for dinner, even as he's pulling the stolen credit card on top of the bill. And Jake immediately agrees to get it. Joe's ready to go Dutch, but Jess invited them and he will pay. Clip two.
I thought you declared bankruptcy a few years ago. I thought they took away your credit cards.
I got it from one of those special TV deals.
Can I see that?
Jake, that's really rude.
That's some brother I got, huh? You know, he's always thinking the worst of me.
Just let me see the credit card.
What, you think I lifted it? Or maybe I knocked somebody over the head for it.
Well, sure as hell wouldn't be the first time.
You know what? I'm getting sick of taking crap from Mr. Perfect.
Just sit down.
I'll pass. I hope you enjoyed your meal.
Which she's storming out without paying for, so that's not that great of a kiss offline, but otherwise, right. Well played. Like, he's so good at manipulating Jake with this shit. Also, Jake, not in front of outsiders.
Yeah. Also, Jake.
I thought you declared bankruptcy. Like, dick. No.
Yeah, that's rude. And you don't have to take every piece of bait, but he does. This is why Jess is good at what he does.
Yeah, exactly.
So Joe goes running after Jess to apologize for Jake. He can be touchy, but he really does want to work things out. But all Jess's life, he's tried to be a brother to Jake, but Jake keeps shutting him out. Now their mother is gone, Jake's all he has left. And if nothing else, at least he got to know Joe better. She makes self-effacing noises, but Jess says he can see why Jake cares about her. And she tries to get him to come back, but he wants to go cool off. But first, he gives her a very long, pointed cheek kiss before taking off. And that's where we leave these three idiots for now. More to come anon, but not this week. On to the B-plot. Amanda and Brooke conspire against Allison. Amanda's back home and in fuzzy, hideous chenille. It's so un-Amanda-y, this look.
Oh, I mean, it's periwinkle and there's like a... There's like a crossover shawl collar happening. And then when you go to the long shot, I mean, it's in the visual aids, but on top of everything else, it's a crop top. And it's like, if anyone had a hope in hell of getting away with this, it was Woodward. But no. Like, it's just so dated. Awful.
Yeah. Plus, it's like the light jeans era, so there's not enough contrast between the sweater and the jeans, too. It's not good. But anyway, this is what she's wearing to chat with Billy before work. Turns out she's in remission and she can't just sit around. D&D was her life and it killed her to give it up just because she was sick, is how she puts it. How we would put it is, you didn't give it up. You were very illegally fired, but okay.
Yep.
Anyway, she wants to go back, but is obviously not going to go grovel to Allison for a job. Billy says she could get hired anywhere, but at a new place, she would have to come up with excuses for why she's still not 100% health-wise, which, like, take time off until you are. Like, you obviously have passive income. You're a landlord. Or take a job, and if they don't accommodate you, sue them. Sue D&D. None of these options are presented, because Billy just says Amanda's reasoning makes sense. So she leaps to the conclusion that therefore he will go to Allison and ask her to give Amanda a job. And he's like, okay, because he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And when Billy lets himself into Allison's office, she and her short skirt are on the phone threatening someone about something ineffectually. And instead of coming back when Allison's in a less bitchy mood, he goes straight in suggesting they hire Amanda as an account executive. Allison is, of course, astonished. So he makes his pitch. She's experienced. She knows the business, blah, blah, blah. And Allison guesses Amanda put him up to this, which Billy doesn't bother trying to deny. Out in the bullpen, a more demure-looking Brooke. She's in, like, a lace turtleneck situation with, like, a blush pink jacket.
Oof.
She apologizes to Billy for what happened the other night. Her family machinations make her want to be rebellious, but she still wants to be friends, so can they have dinner tonight? He says she's going to have to stop playing games. But she says she's not playing games. Her dad's really angry at her. She's scared, and she has no one else to talk to, which, like, I do believe she has no other friends. The rest.
Yeah. Mm. Me too.
So over dinner at friggin' Shooters, Billy is telling Brooke the sad story of how he and his dad fell out over Billy not taking over the store. Remember that one episode? The moral of the story is that he had to do what was right for his life, which is kind of pointed, but this is her story, clip three.
My mother died when I was six, leaving my father to raise me by himself. And I became his whole world. So my entire life, I mean everything, I let him decide. So I finally take a stand and I break it off with Lowell and Daddy freaks out.
What? When did that happen?
Last night. My father's even threatening to cut me off. Financially and emotionally.
Hey, you're smart, you're talented, and you'll do fine on your own.
Oh well. I guess it'll force me to live by my word. I always said I wanted a normal, down-to-earth life. Promise me you'll show me the ropes.
I could manage a few pointers.
Oh, Billy.
If Billy is your mentor in anything, yikes.
Yeah. Also, down-to-earth life, overrated.
Yeah. At the complex, it is Allison's turn to pull an Amanda, by which I mean ambush a blonde at home about work out after hours. As you might expect, she sucks at it. Clip four.
I understand you're interested in coming back to work at D&D.
That's accurate.
I have to say, I don't understand why you'd want to take a step backwards career-wise. Obviously, you wouldn't come in at the same level.
My motives are simple. I'm not interested in working any place that's less than the best.
All right. There is one position open, small accounts rep, but you'd be working out of a cubicle, not an office, with a starting salary in the low 30s. It's quite a step down, but if you want the job, it's yours.
I'll take it.
Fine. If you're up to it physically, full-time hours, there'll be no running off to chemo every day, no preferential treatment.
That won't be a problem. When do I start?
Tomorrow morning. But remember, Amanda, I'm the boss.
Of course you are. But not for long.
Nor should she be.
There'll be no running off to chemo every day. How many times do you want to get sued by the same employee, you fucking idiot?
Oh, my God. And, like, it's not the spa?
Yeah.
And then don't hire her if you think this is going to be a problem. And also if you have half a brain.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like this is a setup. Like she's just, you know, lying in the tall grass waiting for Amanda to run off to chemo so that she can say, like, well, I told you and now you're fired. But whatever.
And get sued again, like you said. I mean, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Business, business, business.
Indeed. So the next day, Amanda comes chirping into the office with her little banker's box, and Allison tries to power trip her by having Brooke brief her on what she missed, but only after Brooke goes out for coffee. But Amanda interrupts to volunteer to go to the do the coffee run herself and take everyone else's drink orders too, which, like, her being the office patsy is, like, delightful. And when she's gone, Allison growls to Billy about Amanda's miscongeniality act. Billy doesn't think Amanda is acting because he's an idiot, and Allison leaves. Brooke asks Billy if she should be cool to Amanda, given that Allison hates her. Billy advises her to be friendly, and Brooke secretly smirks because Billy doesn't know what's going on. And in her office, Allison hangs up with a Mr. Lambert, apologizing. And when Amanda comes in, trailed by Brooke, we learn that Amanda didn't send out this guy's campaign that morning. Is it possibly because Amanda started that morning? Which is basically what Amanda says, shrugging that she doesn't know what Allison is talking about. And Allison loses it. Clip five.
Don't you dare play dumb with me. I gave Lambert my word that it would be delivered on schedule, and I personally left a memo on your desk instructing you to arrange it.
Allison, I never received your memo.
So I'm supposed to believe that on your first day back, coincidentally, there's a major screw-up with the only client I personally handle?
If I had gotten the memo, I guarantee you I would have made it a priority. I know how important the Lambert account is.
I'm warning you, Amanda. I have no intention of putting up with your petty sabotages.
I'm sorry. The memo was buried on your desk. It never got to Amanda.
See to it that this campaign is sent out ASAP. Here's the information. Make sure to follow it up. And you lived with her.
That's to Billy, who's also present.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing about this is, like, if it's that important, do it yourself.
Right.
Since you're handling it personally. But also, you personally walked a memo over to someone's desk. Like, while you're over there, why not wait for her to get back from getting you your goofy cappuccino and then tell her to fuck it? Like, has anyone in the writer's room worked in an actual office ever?
Yeah.
No, because there's a balcony and also all these reasons. It's just so, I mean, like, I understand what's being done here, and yes, I appreciate the next level machinating from Brooke, but guys,
yeah,
like, wouldn't at some point Allison be like, this isn't efficient, I'll just pick up the phone, like, this could have been an email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. it's real dumb. Like, yeah. I mean, to the point of, like, has anyone ever worked in an office? Like, here's what you do your first morning. Nothing. Like, you get set up on your email. People show you where shit is. I mean, granted, Amanda's been there before, but, like, no one expects you to actually do anything. I'm going to say at least your whole first day, probably your whole first week, because you're learning where shit
is. You don't know where anything is. Yeah. You don't have a, like, permanent badge. You don't have a pen.
Yeah.
You don't have an extension. You spend all day in HR talking about Cobra. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I got some kind of rash from peeing in the bushes.
I mean, Amanda probably has a rash at least. She's, you know, not well. Anyway. No. At the office the next day, Allison loads Amanda and Billy up with a bunch of work, and he lingers so he can tell Allison to take it easy on Amanda. And so she slams the door, but then yells at him loud enough for Brooke to hear on the other side of the door. Clip six.
How dare you? How dare you tell me how to run this business?
I'm not telling you how to run it. I'm just telling you not to be such a bitch.
Get this straight, Billy. What goes on between me and Amanda is private property. She personally has a lot of wrongs to make right by me, and she knew that coming into the game. She also knows that she is my employee, as are you. And the last thing I need is to be challenged at every turn by my subordinates.
Oh, is that what I am to you? A subordinate?
Between the hours of 9 to 5? You're damned right.
Fine. Noted for the record.
Fine.
Did she specify hours because they are dating again? Like, what? When? What is your status?
It's like that exchange where he's like, I'm clear on my feelings. And it's like, would you like to put words to the music? Because we don't know what the fuck's going on.
This is so annoying. Ugh.
Yeah. Also, 9 to 5. Like,
right.
Okay.
Out of the bullpen, Brooke lets Billy know she heard enough to be on his side. Her remedy for stress is air hockey at the pier. She'll take him out to work. And he hesitates, but finally relents. And on this date, Brooke thinks she's successfully gotten Billy's mind off Allison with all the fun games, but it actually just reminded Billy of her. Brooke wants to know. Clip 7.
How so?
You'd never know it. Alice and I used to have a blast together. She was great. Totally spontaneous, open to anything. Fun.
Allison Barrett? Yeah. Because you were with Allison Parker. Who you basically dumped because she had some emotional things to work through.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember them going to the pier, I think. Anyway.
And our vain hope that they would take a long walk off a short one. Never realized. I mean, I think it's, I guess it's ironic that like Andrew Shue almost sounds convincing delivering that line, like of all times for him to be selling the idea that Allison is like this, you know, recognizable human and not an A.A. Milne cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay. Show. I mean, it's not boring, but it's weird. There's weird shit going on.
It's true. So Brooke is jealous, but tries to hide it. So Billy says he had a better time with her tonight than he ever did with Allison, and feels good for Brooke to be herself around a man for a change. It's a first for her. And he, like, pets her hair for such a long time as they just stand there with their whole torsos pressed together so close.
It's and so awkward.
She, like, leans all the way in and even closes her eyes but then doesn't kiss him. And he gives her this look like, what is up with you? You can see the visual aids. He's, like, so contemptuous of her. But anyway, or he doesn't know what he's doing or what face to make. Always an option.
I think that's probably it.
Regardless, get on with it. So the next day, Brooke tells Billy that Lambert's on the phone and super pissed, but Allison's at her AA meeting, which, like, oh, interesting, in the middle of the day? So her disability allows her to take off work, but not Amanda's? That's interesting. So Billy tells Brooke to just say Allison's out of the office, but she says he's really pissed. And Amanda, eavesdropping, says she knows how Lambert operates, so she convinces Billy to let Brooke put him through to her desk. And clip 8.
No, Allison isn't here at the moment. She's at an AA meeting. Oh, you didn't know that? She's had some terrible personal difficulties this year, which may explain some of the glitches with your campaign. Now, how can I help you?
This is really wrong, but Amanda has earned it. Like, I hate how they write Amanda to be this shitty about Allison's substance abuse issues, but given all the, there'll be no skipping off to chemo, rolling a hoop commentary from her boss. It's like, you know what? I can live with it. And also, Heather Locklear's having a fucking ball.
Yeah.
With this part of her storyline. And it's fun to watch.
Yep. I agree. So then Allison gets in and asks what she missed. And Brooke recaps Lambert's angry phone call and that Amanda dealt with it. And Allison is changing clothes in her office behind a screen in the corner that obviously still has all of Amanda's own stuff in it. Like the mirror, there's this little round mirror. It's got a, like all moons and stars and swirls and shit, like the other tacky 90s crap in her apartment that we've noted before. You'll see this in the visual aids. Like, Amanda was not even allowed to take out her own furniture that she obviously, like, chose for herself. Weird.
And apparently she left a bunch of her suits back there because the skirt length is like,
Yeah. Belt-esque. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So.
Indeed.
The upshot is that Lambert's insisting on Amanda being the exclusive lead on his account. Brooke hates to say it, but she thinks Amanda has designs on Allison's job. But Allison won't lose sleep over Amanda's trademark backbiting, plus Amanda's nearly powerless in her current position. Well, if backbiting is something Amanda does so much it's her trademark, she's definitely going to be satisfied remaining in that position for sure. Allison, you are right not to worry about it at all.
Also, if she's so powerless, how did she already get you, the boss, kicked off an account?
Not only an account, the one she said is the only one she personally handles.
Yeah, great presidenting there, Parker. Good job.
So that night, Allison brings Billy some reports that need to be edited the next day. Billy and his, it must be said, very flattering jeans, although, again, I would prefer more contrast in the t-shirt color. He is also in baby blue. You can see this in the visual aids as well. he looks bitter and pointedly keeps the door open as she sits at his table and takes her shoes off, making herself at home. So to his expression, she's like, okay, it doesn't have to be first thing. By noon is fine. And they go on from here. Clip 9.
You're amazing.
Look, I know I've been a real workaholic lately, but I'm trying not to be. In fact, I promise from now on after 5 o'clock, no more shop talk. Billy, what's wrong?
You can't just come over here and expect sex on demand.
I'm not demanding anything. I'm just being with you. Why are you acting this way? I thought things were happening between us again.
Yeah, they were for about 10 minutes.
What is that supposed to mean?
You've changed since you got promoted. But the new you is rude and selfish and completely egocentric. I'll look over the reports for you tonight if that's what you want. But sleeping with the boss isn't exactly in my job description. Good night.
So, without one word to me, you have decided that we are just employer-employee now.
Right about the same time you decided I was a subordinate from 9 to 5.
I see. I want those reports first thing in the morning. The noon deadline was for someone I cared about.
I think if we've all learned something from RoboCop is that you fire him, you fuck him, and then you can rehire him.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Furthermore, ooh.
Yeah.
Her trying to be like zipless fuck Allison is just so ridiculous and painful to watch is A. And then his line deliveries, like the broken clock was right all day in this episode, because what he thinks is disgusted is actually not that emotional, but it works.
Yeah.
Job, Andrew Shue.
Yeah. Also, her kiss off line is like, that noon deadline was for someone I cared about. It's like, okay, the blurring of the lines, this is like exactly proving his point. So,
yeah.
Like, get out before you get sued by another employee for sexual harassment. Anyway, he makes a dumb, inscrutable face as she leaves, and it is an all-timer you can see in the visual aid. So, then Brooke and Amanda meet at a bar for a scheme report, and I already noted Brooke's got a beer in front of her, which I don't buy at all, and then I opened the visual aids, and Sarah was like, when you're trying to sell that your character drinks beer, which, like, okay, good, I'm glad it wasn't just me.
No, it wasn't. And it's like, they carefully poured out some of the cream soda so it would look like she took a sip. Like, there is absolutely no way, like, even before the Sex and the City Cosmo era, that you would believe that person would drink a beer or even know how to order one.
Yes. Like, she is definitely something clear at the very least, like gin and tonic, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Brooke has all of Allison's current files and phone logs. Amanda compliments her on the gag where she found Lambert's memo in Allison's desk. Amanda tells the bartender to get Brooke whatever she wants. And although she had been drinking a beer, as we said, she copies Amanda and gets a martini, very dry. And Amanda further compliments Brooke on her excellent work and comments that they're going to make a great team at D&D. And Brooke is like, that's the plan. And they clink their very dry martinis on it. And that's where we leave these two. Finally, we have our A plot. Two Mrs. Mancini's re-team to take down Michael. Or do they? We pick back up with Michael where we left off, on the deck with Kimberly. The latter still passed out. He mocks her and shakes her wrist before finding the note still tucked against her chest and sits down to read it aloud. And Sydney shows up just then and stops to listen to the recitation, but only for a second, because when she sees the disturbing tableau, she's like, clip 10.
Oh my God, you killed her.
No, I just look, I just now came home from work and sat down.
You just now walked in? Michael, you were having a drink.
Well, I thought she was kidding, all right? Shut up and call 911.
Okay. Yeah, good save. Mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yeah, the way this story evolves over time is also not convincing. So while Sydney's on the line, she grabs the note and tucks it into her jacket covertly. So then Michael has to pretend he gives a shit as he accompanies Kimberly's gurney into the hospital. Once she's brought into a curtain area or whatever, Sydney appears. And he sneers at her about why she's even there, and she asks if he isn't wondering why she was at the beach house. And it was so he could be discovered ignoring Kimberly's body, Sydney. We all know why you were there, but the putative reason is that she had to tell him about Jane's business going under. He is her only hope for more cash and is too proud to ask him herself. When did Sydney find this out? Jane confided in her off screen, and if not,
why couldn't they pay Josie Bissett to deliver this line of dialogue?
Right.
Did Chris steal those script pages? That's my assumption.
Right.
He's definitely the reason that the plot is happening. So.
Whatever. Michael doesn't want to talk about investments with his wife in the process of dying. And Sydney's like, do you want condolences or congratulations? And Michael shoves her out of the screen, which you can also see in the visual aids. So Amanda is at home when Michael calls. He's all syrup and she's all business. Clip 11.
Hey, gorgeous.
Hi.
Thought I'd give you a call, check in.
I know I've been out of touch lately, but things have been kind of crazy, you know? Completely wacko, in fact.
It's no problem. What's up?
That's a hell of a way to talk to the man in your life.
Michael, we need to get together.
Now, that's more like it. I want to see you too, babe.
How about dinner tomorrow night?
Someplace romantic. How's the ivy?
Fine. 7 o'clock. I'll meet you.
Oh, make it 7:30 and I'll pick you up.
All right.
Hey, I love you. You know that.
Yeah, I do. I'll see you tomorrow.
Even though is her cold goodbye, he somehow hangs up beaming like everything is going exactly his way. Like, guy, come on now.
Yeah, now that she's better. Yeah, no.
So then Sydney and her beret come to see Kimberly, who guesses that she died and went to hell. Sydney smirks
appreciative. There's a mime there, so good assumption.
Sydney smirks appreciatively at the well-timed joke before describing the scene that she walked in on, to which Kimberly says she didn't try to kill herself. She was poisoned for the settlement money, but Michael doesn't have to get away with it. And it's not credible. Like, we know that's not what happened, but, you know, it could have been. And so she lays out the scheme. Clip 12.
If you went to the house, you could slip some Secanols into my vitamin pill bottle. I'll file charges. The police would search the place, find the pills, and he could be brought to justice for attempted murder.
I think you need a good long rest.
That's not to say there wouldn't be some monetary compensation for you.
Really? How much?
Oh, for 5 minutes' work, I don't know, $50.
For breaking and entering, plus falsifying evidence, try 50,000.
That's absurd. I could get anybody to do it for that amount.
Fine, do it then. But not anybody knows everything I know. Nor witnessed everything I witnessed. And I'm not lifting a finger until the money's in my account.
I'll have it wired tomorrow. While you're there, check around for a letter I was reading that night, something I'd written a while back. It might be misconstrued. When you find it, dispose of it.
For 50 grand, I'll eat it.
Yeah.
I wish these two could get it together to really legitimately be on each other's team.
Every time.
It would be so great. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. So Sydney and her black gloves go to the beach house to pull off Operation Vitamin Switch with Secanol, Operation Switcheroo Vitamin Times, and it goes off way too quickly. So, of course, Michael comes back just as she's about to let herself out again, and she ducks down in the corner of the kitchen peninsula, and he's about to go into the bedroom, but then very stagily indicates hunger by, like, patting his stomach. It's actually kind of cute. He's like Winnie the Pooh.
Speaking of mimes, he's like, oh, tum-tum empty now.
So he comes around to grab a snack, but then goes for an apple from a bowl on the countertop instead. And just, since we're talking about fruit in a fruit bowl, who does this? Like, don't you want any non-banana fruit to be cold, put that shit in the fridge. It's so weird to me when people leave apples
also,
out like that.
Also, it is like, remember the bowl of tuna salad? I think it's the same bowl, but filled with like 28 of, not for nothing, the apple always used on TV and in movies that is actually some mealy shit. The Red Delicious. Fuck out of here with that.
Yeah, Tara, fuck out of here with Red Delicious apples. The worst apples.
A delicious guy?
I like Red Delicious.
No, I hate, they're terrible.
No, I do.
No, they're like, it's like sawdust and a sponge had a baby and it was an apple called Red Delicious.
Yeah, I'm not usually a texture problem person, but there's just something about, like, I can't, once I've had a gala, I can't with Red Delicious. Anyway, they are very telegenic, but that is a lot of apples for two people who are basically never home because they're scheming or in New York or in Rochester or scheming.
Well, apples keep for a long time. They are shelf stable.
True.
I agree. A bad Red Delicious is bad, but a good one is very nice.
Wrong.
They're nice and crisp.
If I may, while we're still on the apple talk, there's a relatively new variety out there called Cosmic that is really good. If you like Honeycrisp, but sometimes it's just like, it's too much, Cosmic. Seek it out.
Yeah. Okay. They're in like the Royal Gala.
Yeah.
Edge of the apple spectrum. But yes, of late, I have gotten more into the Golden Delicious. Mm-hmm. And those are also good.
Yeah, those
shaking his head.
I mean, they're better, but they're like Red Delicious just tend to be like already dry and the skin is too tough.
Let's stop dancing around us, Sarah. Tara has terrible taste in apples.
I mean,
let's shun her.
It's not my taste in apples.
All right, moving on.
These opinions are rotten to the core.
Quit raising issues of fruit that aren't important.
This isn't supposed to be miserable.
True. I forget if I said this already. He leaves. Sydney slips out. I guess the reason that Michael was only having a snack is so he didn't ruin his appetite for dinner out with Amanda. He puts his hand on hers as he compliments her, and she curtly tells him, pulling her hand away, she doesn't go in for public affection. Like, really? Not even touching her hand? Yikes.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
In his defense, like, first of all, he's determined not to take any hints of this type. Mm-hmm. But even if he were, like, if this is supposed to be the breakup dinner, which it clearly was, because you were like, 7, I'll meet you. Like, then don't order food.
Right.
Like, when we arrive at their table, they're already eating. And it's like, girl, no. Get a glass of water and a number for a cab company and be like, I don't want to see you romantically anymore. And then beat feet.
Yeah. So after the hand pull away maneuver, he still, for some reason, says he thinks she might feel differently about public affection soon and pulls a ring box out of his jacket. But she takes it and opens it. And now Sarah said, called this another fugazi ring. I feel like it's not as bad as some of the ones we've seen. It's at least a simple cut and setting.
It is better. They're not using that garish, fakey yellow gold.
Yeah.
It does look, I think I called it Big Rock Candy Mountain jewelry store. It does look like rock candy, the stone, but we've seen worse.
Yeah.
That's such a low bar, though.
It really is.
That's the best one yet. Like, well, yes, but.
Well, it's in the visual aid, so you tell us, listeners, do you want us to propose to you with this ring, yes or no? Anyway, this is what they say about it, clip 13.
I want you to be my wife, Amanda. What's the matter with you? I'm serious here.
Oh, it's sweet. But I'm not marrying you. I mean, I appreciate everything you've done for me through the course of my illness, but as we both know, I'm better now.
Wait, what are you saying?
I'm saying I'm not interested in seeing you anymore, much less marrying you.
Wait. You don't want to see me? Since when?
Our relationship, for lack of a better word, was based on need, and that need no longer exists.
So you want to break up? Just like that?
It's not as though we were together in any real sense. I mean, I was vulnerable and you were there. Frankly, you took advantage of the situation by drawing me into a physical relationship. A lesser person might have filed suit.
Do you have any idea what I've gone through just to be with you? Do you have any idea at all? Kimberly tried to commit suicide because I left her for you.
Stop right there. This is more than I need or want to know about your psycho-compulsive marriage.
I love you, dammit. And I've given up everything just so I can. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
It means that you got too involved with your patient, doctor, which ultimately is not my problem.
Where's the lie?
Yeah, she has been sending him so many signals, like literally since they fucked, ever since that day, she's been like, no, like I'm not interested. Like every time he tells her he loves her, she's been like, don't say it.
Yeah. Like you should stop doing that.
Yeah. Everyone has seen this coming for weeks, my guy. Like, come
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Sorry, so. Buddy.
At the hospital the next day, Michael gets paged to talk to detectives Hayes and Lang, who are investigating the Kimberly Shaw case. And Michael's like, what case? And Hayes explains Kimberly's allegations of attempted murder, which Michael angrily refutes before saying Kimberly can be overly dramatic. And Hayes just regards him as though he's thinking, I'm not sure you're the chillest yourself, dude. But anyway, Michael declares he's going to go find out what this is all about himself. But Hayes stops him and says Kimberly has a witness. Michael shoots back that Kimberly attempted suicide and he has the note to prove it. And Hayes is like, cool, can I see it? And Michael says it's at the house. And Hayes is like, whoops, we got a search warrant and we didn't find it, but we sure did find a vitamin bottle full of Seconal. So don't leave town. So then Michael goes straight to Kimberly's bed to yell at her because I guess she accused him of attempted murder but did not also file a restraining order. Not to say he would have respected it if she had, but there's no mention of that, by the way. Mm. So here's how that goes. Clip 14.
If this is another one of your pathetic gestures to keep me tied to you, Kimberly, forget it.
Oh, I don't know. Once Amanda gets wind of the fact that you're being charged with attempted murder, I seriously doubt she's going to hang around and wait for the conjugal visits to kick in.
You tried to take yourself out of the game. I wasn't even there when it happened.
No, but you were just going to let me lay there and die, weren't you?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the whole point of suicide?
I can't believe I ever loved you, you heartless bastard.
And anyway, I didn't let you die. I saved your pitiful ass.
You did not save me, Michael. Fate just stepped in, and when it did, it revealed to me my life's mission, to make yours a living hell.
Well, you are really losing it, Kimberly, especially if you think you're going to make this attempted murder crap fly. There's no proof. It just doesn't exist.
Wrong, Michael. Very wrong.
I mean, there isn't proof. He's right. We'll
True.
See.
Yeah.
So Michael heads home and starts tearing the deck furniture apart, looking for the note as though the cops who tossed the place that morning would not also have thought to do that. And of course he doesn't find it, but then thinks to call Sydney and knows the number for Shooters off by heart because it's the past. She really luxuriates in her current position. Clip 15.
You clipped it, didn't you? Right from the scene of the so-called crime.
Who is this? No, let me guess. Someone who's rude, brash, and too self-important to identify himself must be Michael?
Yeah, right. I'm laughing my head off. Where's Kimberly's suicide note?
Funny you should mention that, Michael. Have you ever heard the expression, possession is 9/10 of the law?
Just get to the point.
The note's for sale, Michael.
Yeah, all right. Meet you at the corner of Wilshire and Grove, the coffee shop, in an hour. We'll negotiate.
I'll bring my calculator.
When she starts out being like, who is this? Oh, I know. It's someone who blah, blah, blah. Would have been so great if she just done a like, who is this? Like Jerry on Seinfeld, whenever George calls hysterically, like giving him a million instructions super duper fast. And Jerry would just say that back. And then George would like hammer the phone against the payphone because that was where he always was. That would have been a nice reference. But alas, that does not occur.
No.
Anyway, Sydney meets Michael at this coffee shop. She wants to get food, but he orders her to get to the point. So she says she knows about the insurance settlement and will sell him Kimberly's note for half. Clip 16.
You honestly think you're gonna get 50 grand for some stupid piece of paper? You're as loony as Kimberly is.
You know, it all but absolves you of any wrongdoing, Michael. Without the note, and together with the Planet Drugs they're gonna pin on you, you'll be breaking rocks in no time. What if the burgers aren't any good here?
This is a bunch of bull. Pay you for what? How do I even know you have the damn note?
You probably never believed this, Michael, but you are my reason for living. Nothing else compared.
All right. Money's yours. Just hand it over.
You'll get it as soon as the money is posted into my account. Here's the number. Nothing else compared. I guess there really is no accounting for taste, is there?
You know, Sydney, if I were you, I'd watch my back. Because neither me nor the missus likes you very much.
Here's my question. Why Sydney doesn't, like, make him dangle until she also got Kimberly's half of the money?
Yeah.
Because, like, all Kimberly asked her to do was get rid of the note. She can't prove a negative. Like, all she would have had to do is go back to the hospital and be like, I ate it, like I said. You know? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, because Kimberly in the hospital could not Venmo her from her bed. But, like, I think in those days you could still phone the bank. Like, you probably had, you know, some kind of, like, passcode or something.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I also don't. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Sydney was like, but I love you, Michael. Like, I mean, there's no accounting for taste. Like,
yeah.
Word.
Right. Anyway, Kimberly's getting ready to go home when Michael comes into her hospital room and she snits that he should probably be posting bail when he produces her note. And this occurs, clip 17.
How much did the little witch charge you?
Oh, it's bad business to compare costs, Kimberly. Besides, we should move on to matters of more importance. Like the fact that you're going to drop the charges, take a job out of state, and generally get the hell out of my life.
Or what?
Or I'll see to it that the state board in every California hospital gets a copy of this note, written by a clearly unstable physician.
I am never leaving you or this state, Michael. Never.
That's a copy, of course. I had 200 made. Now, let me break this down for you. If you stay, you'll probably lose your medical license. You'll be downright unemployable. Soon after, you'll enter the ranks of the homeless population. But with any luck, you'll still be able to live out at the beach in a refrigerator box. But if you go, well, then I'll destroy the note. The whole incident will be ruled accidental. And we'll all live happily ever after. Well, at least I will. So, why don't you put a call into those detectives and tell them it was all a terrible mistake?
With every cell of my body, I hate you.
I hear Anchorage General has a good treatment program for that disorder.
Like,
everything about this is so horrible and just like thoughtless about suicidal ideation, traumatic brain injury, the unhomed.
Yeah.
But because of that, it really works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people are just garbage. And it's like watching two pieces of flaming garbage dancing. And it's not boring.
Mm-hmm. Hearing that clip, I wonder if him saying it's rude or whatever he said to compare costs, if that's his saying, like, we both paid, he knows somehow that they both paid her. But if that were the case, I feel like he would be more mad that all of the money was gone over this escapade, right?
Yeah, I feel like it was communicated to him that he had to match.
Right.
Like, whoever paid her first got her to do what they wanted. And right. I guess he paid first. So yeah. I have a feeling off screen, he, like Sydney, who doesn't know how to get out of her own way so often.
Mm-hmm.
Communicated the terms and was like, well, Kimberly's tied up in the hospital and can't go to the bank, so
yeah,
we're doing business.
Sure.
Also, I'd like a cheeseburger.
Yes, $50,000 and a cheeseburger.
Bless her heart.
Relatable. So Sydney's bringing laundry back up to her place when Kimberly suddenly appears out of the courtyard shadows to loom over her. She just wanted to tell Sydney she's leaving town for a while. If she had more time, she would get her back for that note business. Probably painfully, but she's in such a rush. And Sydney chirps that she doesn't want to keep Kimberly and tries to go on her way. But Kimberly grabs her by the hair and yanks her back. And I feel like this was a formative sexual moment for a lot of viewers. You can see it in the visual aids.
It was a formative sexual moment for me watching it again. It was like,
Yeah.
That's right. I love gingers.
When we say we wish the two of them could get it together against Michael, like, that's phase one. And phase two is get it together with each other. Come on now. Anyway, Michael might be letting Sydney get away with this, but he's weak. Kimberly is not. Sydney owes her, and Kimberly will be back to collect with interest. And that's where we leave it.
Sure
for now.
Is.
All right. Let us close out with our episode MVP. I'm going to say Sydney. For once, she schemed successfully. She actually got the money. So good job.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Sydney.
All right. Least valuable player. Future defendant Allison.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I hate to repeat 2 weeks in a row, but, like, bitch, get it together.
Yeah. Also, since I haven't mentioned it, but just a reminder, it's Billy.
Yeah. It's Billy.
It's Billy. Next time and again with this, Amanda sets an Eeyore trap, Kimberly is making more than lanyards at Camp Bluestocking, and Sydney decides to invest her blackmail lucre in Mancini Designs. Find out for free why that's a stupid idea by visiting our visual aids, which you could find for every episode of Again With This on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And note this for the record, there are oodles, plural, of extra 90210 and Melrose discussions at patreon.com/againwiththis. Join today. It's a smile. You want to stop fucking doing that? I'm trying to read. Dick. I'm Conspiratini Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Big Rock Candy Mountain Diamond Dealer Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is self-care arcade manager and dick, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
That doesn't make any sense.